So welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters, and today is still June 20th, 2023. And still with me, I believe, is...
My name is Rich Ross. Just kidding.
All right, so one of the, you know, we were talking about a little bit of sort of, I mean, I'm calling it, I think I was jokingly referring to like looking back at the last year and a half of Cambridge City Council activities as grading on a curve, meaning, you know, just being a wise ass, of course, as usual, but basically saying, you know, do you give people an A or B, a C, or a failing grade on certain things, you know? And I think that the grading period is still ongoing here, you know,
this line's always about quantity, not quality. So I think that's, you know, if we're grading on the weight of the paper, maybe that's a B. If we're grading on the quality of the work, it's unintelligible, incomplete.
Yeah, I think I would at this point give an incomplete to a lot of them. I mean, there's a lot of things that are sort of, writing a paper with a chatbot or something like that. It looks good, but I don't know how much authenticity is it is. Actually, if you look around, a lot of the initiatives like let's eliminate parking minimums, I said, well, it's actually part of like a national movement where it's almost an ideology about eliminating parking minimums. So yeah, did they do that? Sure, thoroughly predictable. Even some of the things related to Budo, stuff like that, or eliminating fossil fuels and whatever. It's part of a national.
Did they do it because they thought it was a good idea, or did they do it because they're afraid someone would go on Twitter and slap them? You know,
you're insufficiently progressive.
Well, I think you don't get a gold star. Thing, like, I saw that as like, dang, like I try to remove parking or at least cut it in half in Central Square, and I got read the riot act, and here these guys are doing it for every use imaginable in the city, and it's sailing through. They even wrote the worst zoning petition I've ever seen in my life. It was complete. They got all zeros. Like the maximum was zero too. So and you could also like have unlimited parking. Like it was, that's how broken the whole thing was. And they still passed it. And I'm like, if you're working for CDD, like, you know, throw my hat down. Like I went to planning school, goddammit.
No, actually, when that happened, I mean, my first thought was, you know, for years they've been sort of carefully looking and saying, like, well, what should be the waive parking requirements if you're in one of the squares, you know, close to public transit, you know, but what if you're out in the periphery, you know, and it is a new development there, and is already some competition for parking, should you still require some parking? I thought there should have at least been a conversation, but when you're dealing with people who market in ideology more so than anything else, that conversation just doesn't, I guess, get a chance to happen so much anymore.
No, going back to your grading on a curve, I always look at the results of what they've done. And when I got here in 2004 and five and where we are now, and, you know, right now, the most lucrative development project in the city of Cambridge is a single family house. That is the honest to gosh truth.
You mean, so if you're a developer who just wants to find an opportunity, build something, sell it, or own it, or keep it, whatever, that's really where the incentives are all.
The zoning has told me to build a single family house. The market has told me to build a single family house. And our city council has told me to build a single family house.
Even while they're eliminating, they want to make multifamily housing a permitted use everywhere in the city.
Yeah, but the fine print that they're not telling you, again, going back to nuance, is that Chapter 40A is very protective of the right to build a single family and two family. There's nothing they can do side of change in state law to remove that component. So that's always going to be an allowed thing to do. But if you look at it from a practical development, if I could build, you know, four apartments, four bathrooms, four kitchens, four bedroom, four, you know, all fours, and sell it for $1,000 a foot, or build one and sell it for actually $1,100 a foot is what you're getting right now. It's easy. And if we're talking about like in the inclusionary ordinance, because Mark wanted to make a developer squirm and we're going to be in so much pain. We're not building. Go down to ISD and ask them how many multi-family permits have been issued.
Well, you know, that's, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, but I know that I had some concerns that if they, I mean, when they first passed inclusionary zoning back in, I think it was around 1997 or eight or something like that, they actually looked at it carefully and they said, well, we'll want to require a 15% of, you know, affordable units if you're 10 units or above, and we'll make you a deal. You know, for every one unit we require you to do, we'll get let you build another one, and we'll make some modifications to the allowable densities to accommodate it. So this way, everything's fair and square. We didn't take anything from you. We got a benefit out of it. And, you know, it seemed like, all right, that's a reasonable kind of deal that they hashed out. But when they did the modifications to inclusionary zoning, they just basically threw all that away and said, 20%, take it or leave it. Get, you know, and well, apparently
take it or leave it, and they give you a bump, but you can't use the bump most of the time because you're violative in other parts of zoning. And what you're really looking at is building like an additional 50% of your building, the 20% that you got to give and the 30% that you get. And economically, it makes no sense to do it, especially at the lower numbers, which they know. San Francisco knows. They're reducing their inclusionary from 25% back to 12, and they're still admitting that it's still broken, doesn't work. And it's back when we said, like, you know, you can say you want 20% or 30%, but 0% of 0% is still, I don't know, Robert, I didn't go to school like you did, but like, it's still zero, isn't it?
Right. I think that's exactly right. So now, like, I don't know what the net impact of the increase in the linkage from 20 bucks and change up to 30 something, whatever it was, 33 or something like that, what that effect has been.
I can tell you. So the people are, well, there's lots of reasons for it, not just linkage, but people are pulling back. Projects are being reduced. You know, lots of projects up in Alewife are having trouble getting started. Their funding's dried up. BC money is gone from Kendall. Kendall's looking at a 30% vacancy rate. And these ding-dongs are playing like it's MIT and Harvard, the only people we need to pay attention to. I was just down at ISD this morning talking to the venerable Ranji and Olivia. And I asked them point blank, I said, what are you guys seeing for permits? Single families, townhouses, that's it. Because that's what makes sense. And right now those places are trading for $1,100, $1,200 bucks a foot. There's a house down the street from me is sold for $2.4 million. That was 1,900 square feet. And like 500 square feet was in the basement. I'm going, what? What? That's...
Well, you know, the tragic thing is that I don't see any mechanism with the current configuration, you know, of, you know, councilors and city management and city department heads for there to be a serious evaluation of any of this.
Well, because, you know, I say things like that. And instinctively, I can hear the, you know, the Mr. Zondervan thinking out loud, we ought to ban single family houses. Well, you can't, stupid. Well, you know, we ought to ban something.
Well, you know, that actually caused me to think of yet another complaint I've had for some time, which is, you know, economics kind of works with the invisible hand to some degree. It doesn't always work perfectly well, but it does sort of happen on its own. And then the extreme alternative is sort of the more the command and control perspective. It says, we don't believe in economics. What we are going to do is we have decided that these are our goals and we're going to inflict them. So whether it means what's effectively, I like, for example, the affordable housing overlay, and only to be put on steroids perhaps soon, you know, if they have the votes. Basically, where it can say, well, normal economics would cause certain things to happen, but that's not what we want to have happen. So what we're going to do is we're going to let one particular preferred builder build 3 to 4 times as much as anybody else. I don't even know that really is illegal, if that's even legal, if people really challenged it.
There might be a uniformity.
But it's all sort of part of a mindset that basically says, this is how it's going to be. And they sell it, you know, as though it's somehow going to be realized according to their ideals, but it doesn't actually work out that way. I mean, ultimately, the affordable housing overlay, as far as I know, is basically turned into a way in which Cambridge Housing Authority, Justice Starts, can basically build more units on the properties that they already owned, you know.
Which was part of their plan originally. And that's how they modeled what they wanted to get, what they needed for their own parcels. You know, are they going to compete with a developer for a lot in Central Square or Harvard Square? I don't think so. They might be able to pick up a contract with the city for existing land that the city owns. But I know I modeled a residential project in Central Square for Harvard Business School. I talked to fancy people too. And I took the Middle East and basically turned it into a residential project instead of a hotel. And I came out with an equity position in the property at $20 million, gets you a $34 million building that costs you $60 million to build with a return of negative $3 million a year.
Right.
That's our current zoning. And that's why it'd be better for me to go into Cambridgeport, buy a three-decker for $2 million, gut it to the shell, turn it into a single family, sell it for $5 million.
Yeah.
Which I can do.
Yeah. No, I'm not arguing.
You know what? It would be relaxing. It'd be like a winter's breeze. I'd be like a nice cup of cider on a farm. Like it's just simple construction.
And it seems like what we're getting instead, certainly in terms of like AHO, is it's almost like a gambler, sort of says, well, we've decided to like put our bets on this, but then it didn't pan out. I'll tell you what, okay, I'll raise that. I'll see that and I'll raise you another. And then what if it doesn't pan out? So pretty much what are they going to do? Going to say, well, I guess if allowing one preferred developers to develop at four times the density wasn't enough, let's make it eight. Come on, I'll see you for
when you have a community development department that's scared of its own shadow. So they're not going to tell you the truth, and they're going to reverse engineer studies to come out to a conclusion that you want to hear. And you got a few city councilors that I don't think they're all stupid. I think actually some are pretty smart. And I think the double charter right Mr. Zondervan pulled off last week was pretty brilliant. You can't talk about any of the things you want to talk about, and we're going to vote on them ad hoc on the 26th. Brilliant. But I have to believe that some of the people who are these housing advocates know damn well they're breaking it. And they're fine with that because they know what they really want, which is what they've always wanted. Nothing. They don't want anything.
I have to point out to sort of one of the sort of comical aspects of the charter right, which, by the way, Mayor Siddiqui and many of other councilors, it's not a verb. There is no past tense. You can't talk about something being charter.
I charter wrote.
Or I charter wrote it, or it was charter written. If you ever use a word like that, it only proves your ignorance. So let's just be clear about that. And I can tell you that everyone who's ever served as city clerk, for as long as I can remember, is horrified every time you do that. All right. You're going, who are you people? Who are you people? But let me explain to folks what charter right is about. A charter right, and then on the school committee, they call it calendaring an item, basically is there as a safeguard to make sure that if somebody comes in and drops a bomb and says, here's an order, you didn't know about it in advance, every one of the members has the singular right to just say, no, not tonight. We must delay this because I haven't had a chance to think this through. Yes. Now, what Mr. Zondervan has done is really quite an interesting little spin on that. Like, for example, was it a few weeks ago, there was one having to do with the police involved shooting or releasing the police officer's name or something like that. I think it was one of those. And so he writes the charter, he writes the order, and then he exercises his charter right so that the other counselors can realize the terribleness of their ways.
I just think that
it's the exact opposite of what the charter right exists for.
I just think that that's amazing with a capital A. And I just like the hubris, the arrogance. It's just like it's like a chef's kiss on a just a crap sandwich. And I hate games, and I think that like in my world we can't do that. We can't play games. And he does it all the goddamn time, and the council goes along with it. It's almost like I don't blame them for doing it. They fall for it every single time. But I think to sort of close the loop on the litany of things this council has accomplished. Just because you did a lot of things doesn't mean it was all good. And it doesn't mean that it's all going to work. And I also don't think if your foundation is made out of Play-Doh and it's sitting in salt water, it's going to rot away. And just like with the inclusionary ordinance that they changed, 6, 7, 8 years ago, which is garbage. It's total garbage. And everyone knows it too. that these other policies that they're passing to are also garbage. And we don't have the kind of strength of character, spine in our current administration to publicly say so. Now, Budo sounds great. Stick it to the developers, stick it to the labs. They're not going to pay a dime. No way. There's a lawsuit coming for that. And Eversource hasn't done a damn thing to make it possible. So, okay, you pass something that made us all net zero by 2035, but no one's going to do it. So, to you.
Right.
You got something to say about that, Robert?
No. I'm not disagreeing. But you know, there are other things which you know. I mean, I always kind of laugh about when people make assertions about how much we've accomplished, because you know, just because you pass things doesn't necessarily mean you've accomplished much of anything. All you've done is pass some ordinances or modified some zoning amendments. But the thing is that ultimately a zoning ordinance or an ordinance is only as good as its effects. And one of the effects that I will simply point out the obvious on is that, you know, in terms of people writing letters to the city council and being outraged about some things, whether it's having to do with North Mass Ave road reconfigurations or Budo or quite a few other things, maybe some of the housing related initiatives that are well. I have never, you know, and I've been watching for 30 plus years, I've never seen as much sort of just bubbling up outrage of people around the city to saying like, what are you people doing?
The city council was never in people's living rooms like they are now. And like, I think that's a fundamental shift in how these councilors see themselves as like individual state legislators. They're not city councilors, not a board of directors steering the city. They're actually changing policy. They see themselves like almost like a precursor to a national level. And it's not their function. It's not what they're supposed to be doing. And I think more and more, where it used to be people like me who showed up, said, you know, this zoning thing or that, you know, regulatory thing is causing a problem. Other people are feeling the effects. But I honestly think, Robert, you know, and I'm going to quote the great Tim Toomey, it's got to get a lot worse. I think people need to get engaged. They're not enough of them are. And it's going to have to get a lot worse before you see much of a change in that.
Well, you know, one other metric that one might use to sort of gauge general dissatisfaction, this may change in the coming weeks or months, but I was looking at things like campaign finance reports and thinking there are really only a couple of councilors who have been pretty predictably responsive, at least trying to find solutions. Actually, you may disagree with me on this one here, but on North Mass Ave, you know, when they were implementing some of the road reconfigurations, it was actually Paul Toner and Dennis Carlone were the ones who were basically out there beating the bushes, talking to people, trying to find accommodations so that people could live with what was happening. You know, so I'll give them both a lot of credit.
Robert, I'm going to say something to you that I will say nobody else on the planet Earth. I find myself in the twilight of Carlone's career agreeing with him more than I ever have in the past. And I absolutely knocked horns with that guy on C2 and all the things he stopped Central Square from happening in his stupid Pearl Harbor robocall. But like, you know, I agree with him on how he handled the bike thing. He's still Captain Reverso when it comes to votes. You can never count on that man to vote for anything, especially when he says he's going to. But, you know, on some of these things, he's kind of like normalized. But like, you know, he's seeing the exit this year. I'm kind of half sad, half happy. But, you know, it's...
Again, not to overemphasize the dollars that go into people's campaign coffers, but of every dollar that has gone towards city council campaigns in this election cycle, about 80 over 80 cents out of a dollar has gone to Paul Toner. And I don't think that's because he's shaking everybody down.
No,
I think it's because I've gone to a couple of times for Paul, and you know, by the way, for those that don't know, a time is a political event for, you know, that's Cambridge speak, right? Old timey. And the number of people who've come out in support of him because they felt he was the only one who was listening to them is actually quite high. And they came with their checkbooks, you know?
Paul has been the only adult in the room. And I think, you know, Denise is a little fatigued. And she's also like, she needs that support. But, you know, in terms of counselors, if I was voting today, I'd be voting Toner, Simmons, probably McGovern too, just so he wouldn't fucking give me a hard time. But I like Mark. We just disagree on so many things. But no one's really listened to anybody right now. And I think when Paul just answers a phone call or returns an email, like without a snarky, rude response, like Whitten always does, like, how dare you question me? Here's not even a response. Here's a link to an article you need to read. You're like, okay, to you too.
Well, you know, it's interesting when there's, you know, various things have come down the pike. And again, I often go back to the North Mass app, but it's not just that, it's various other ones. And Paul basically comes up with an order trying to say, like, can we take a look at this? Can we at least evaluate what's worked and what hasn't worked and whatever? That's actually met with hostility from some of the counselors. The notion that you would actually try and be reasonable and actually evaluate things and be ready to make modifications if in fact the data suggests it would be a good thing to do so. That ends up being met with actual real hostility. Like again, not to harp on the cycle safety ordinance, but I kind of laugh. I mean, I like young Mr. Azim. He's a nice kid.
I did too.
But the thing is that, you know, when Paul comes in with an order asking you to do some reevaluation of, and set some standards and benchmarks for, you know.
I'll add him to my list too. I'll add Azim to my list too. Sorry.
Yeah, but then Baran comes in, you know, and I joked about it, you know, and wrote about the Civic Journal and just basically said, it's really only a question about what form of the following phrase is he going to use, which is that as long as it doesn't in any way change any word of the cycling safety ordinance. So ultimately, it really comes down to an affirmation that we will not modify anything, you know, and that's not really great.
Maybe it would help the city council if they knew that we didn't think they were all geniuses. You know, I think some of them are under the impression that they admit that they're wrong or that they screwed up, that somehow is a crack in the armor that we, you know, would be too much for us to bear to see. And I want to just say unequivocally, we know you don't know anything. It's okay. You can make mistakes and pull it back. But you know, the cycle safety ordinance is one example of that. But all these other things that they're doing, it's almost like they're hyperventilating to get as much through the door as possible. Either building up a resume of dumb things that we did this summer, or I don't know what for. The next beyond the next TEDx talk, which by the way, Robert, TEDx means less than is what that means. But I think it's kept people on their toes so much that I need a vacation from it.
Well, you know, one of the things that happens during municipal election season, and I think we're going to really start to see this happening now on steroids starting July 3rd and certainly into September, October, there are certain issues that people think of as sort of bread and butter issues, meaning, oh, this is going to look good. People will rally around me for this. Like you'll say, the obvious one is you say, oh, I'm all for good for affordable housing. You go, yeah, but you know, saying you're for affordable housing basically means you are part of 100% of the people. the question is, well, what aspects of affordability and
housing? Well, I'm against it.
Right. You know, I mean, so saying you're for that doesn't mean much. Saying you're for municipal broadband, that's guaranteed to get a lot of people saying, yeah, I want that. But then when it turns out that there's a report that says that the actual benefits of having a municipal broadband might be worth carrying it out at great expense, or maybe it might not be. But then the political people probably are not going to talk about the might not be's.
But Robert, is it going to help me with the lag on my World of Warcraft character? Or am I going to be able to log into Call of Duty? That's the real thing. That's the real issue facing us right now.
Well, you know, one of the things I learned from students, watching students' behavior in my courses, is, you know, I have kind of an outmoded notion. I mainly work, I'm at a laptop computer now, but I usually work at a desktop computer. But then I noticed that most of my students are doing everything on their phones, you know? So tell me what all that municipal broadband is going to add up to for all the people who are even watching TV shows or movies on phones.
That reminds me, we were talking about having TVs in the dial in the hotel, and those old fellows who were part of the management team were like, we need to have TVs because people won't watch the news. And I'm like, people don't watch the news on TV. I haven't watched the news on TV in 10 years. I watched it on this damn thing.
I know.
Or read a story real quick.
No, I mean, and I do it on my desktop, you know, I don't do, I still no phones for me, you know, but the thing is, you just watch. I mean, I was sort of going to joke, Alana Mallon so exited the political campaign this year, but I was going to joke. I was going to say, well, when is she going to pull out her weekend backpack? Because when you miss an election, that's something that kind of sells well on Main Street, you know? So you'll hear a lot about municipal broadband and how much you love housing, and there'll be a few other key things like we take addressing climate change seriously. Doesn't matter.
Control. You're going to see a DSA rush this summer and fall. Those ding dongs will be out in force.
Yeah, no, I expect as much. And it's sort of like maybe this will be the year that there's an effort to try and have what happened in Somerville happen more in Cambridge, you know, to sort of have the revolutionaries sort of take over.
What a great job they did.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, just been quietly living in their homes and not actually thinking about any of this stuff, who might actually wake up a little bit, you know.
When you turn Matt McLaughlin into a centrist, You know there's poison in that well.
Yeah, you know, but I you know, we'll see what happens. You know, it's sometime in late October is when the annual real estate tax bills come back, and there may be a little bit more of a shock this year than in the past. You know, we'll have to see, but you know, anyway, but you know, you just watch, everything's going to smell like daisies and roses and wonderfulness from what the political people say. But I think it's also important that everybody kind of take a look back at what they've done or not done, or even what they have done, whether it has been effective or not. And, you know, plenty to do there. Anyway, it looks like we're about out of time once again. So we'll be back soon on Cambridge Inside Out.